This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Oh, it's just hosted by Kath this week. Brian's away. But guess what? I have our newest member of the Lefty Pinkos team in the studio with me tonight. It's Lauren Hawkes. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, very well, thank you. Now, look, tonight we have a very special guest, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do.
And we've had a few visual artists on the show, and it's a sort of interesting thing to talk about, you know, visual art and radio. And what we're having here tonight, though, is somebody who's not just a visual artist in his own right, but someone who escaped from Vietnam, became a refugee, came to Australia with literally nothing, and has built up an artistic career from scratch,
pretty much.
And the most beautiful works. We're going to try and convey some of the look of some of the works. So they're so beautiful that Quay took me through the pronunciation of his name. Quay Nguyen is with us tonight, and we're sort of trying to convey kind of the delicacy of the work and the way that his human rights experience is now sort of coalescing with his artistic work as well. All that typical Lefty Pinkos boots and all political and creative rant. Do you reckon that just about sums it up, Lauren?
I think it does.
Yeah. So we're going to be saying hello to Brian, who's out there in sick land today, and talking to our guest tonight, Quay Nguyen.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos, Kath Duncan with you. And instead of Brian, we've got Lauren Hawkes. Say hello, Lauren.
Hello. How are we going?
I understand this is your first time on air as a co-presenter.
As a co-presenter, yes, it is.
Oh, the excitement.
Exciting.
Tonight we have a fantastic artist, a person who's a human rights artist and activist in the studio with tonight. We'd like to welcome Quay Nguyen. Have I got it right?
Yes, that's right.
Now move closer, move into the mic so we can hear your voice.
Hi,
hello.
Hi, how are you doing? You doing well?
Yes, very well, thank you.
That's good.
Now, where I'd like to start is tell us about the significance of that first track.
Oh, that track is the track that I always put on every time I get into the studio, because it set me in the right mood for whatever I'm doing afterward. That is relaxing and meditative for me. So when I put that one on, I have a cup of coffee, sharpen my pencil, and my pencil is one of my way of checking to see if I'm the right stage of mind. Because if I'm focused enough, if I'm calm enough, if I keep breaking the tip of the pencil, that means I'm not ready. Mm-hmm. I'm not focused on what I'm doing. My mind is not calm. So because my work is a very delicate.
Yes.
I need to be in the right mind frame.
Yes,
to be able to produce a work.
Because it is quite sort of fine work.
Yes, it takes a long time, and I don't normally use pencil on my work at all. Hardly ever.
Now, going back to when you were a child, my understanding is both your parents were fine art teachers.
Yes.
And you spent your childhood doing watercolours on silk.
Yes, actually, my parents are both artists, and they met in the art school, and they married, and they had the private classes at home. So I grew up with that environment, and I just become an artist. And mom used to be a specialist with the Vietnamese traditional medium, which is watercolor on silk. So I follow her with that medium, and that's how I get into arts to start with.
Now, I understand it was a very difficult childhood, and you sold your works to help keep the family alive.
Oh, actually, yes, it's a very, very hard time. You know, after 1975, the whole country became communist, and
And were you in Saigon?
Yeah, I was in Saigon. And the thing is, the communism, they control people by making the people poorer and poorer all the time. They keep changing money. And every time they change money, every household only allowed to change a certain amount of, like, 1,000 dong, for example. And then the rest be put in the bank, which you never see it again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so people had to demand on the voucher, the food stamp that the government give it to you and everything. So slowly, our family or everyone else had keep selling all their belongings to survive.
Really?
And we have piano, we have everything in the house, and we slowly everything gone. The whole thing just poorer and poorer and poorer. So we had to go to the market and sell stream paste, dry fruit, food. And I have a little stationery mat selling stationery in front of a primary school between my school time. So I go to school and then at the day break, I run to the other school next, it's about 100 to 200 meters away from my house, and then selling it, and then so do everything to survive, basically.
That sounds pretty harsh.
It was hard.
We're talking to Quay Wing here on Joy. This is Lefty Pinkos. As we talk through the hour, we're about to find out what happened next in Quay's life as he decided to leave Vietnam and jump on a boat.
Make his journey to Australia.
Yeah, via Malaysia. We've been talking outside about some of this, some of the trip that Quay had, and it's certainly a bit of a curly tale. Stay with us, Kath and Lauren, interviewing artist Archibald Prize nominee. He was the first Vietnamese artist to make it through to the final stages of the Archibald Prize, which in 2010, and other stuff with us tonight. Stay with us.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
It's a very haunting track here on Lefty Pinkos.
Yes.
Quay, could you tell us the significance of that song for you?
That song is one of the songs they play in the refugee camp. They play every time there's people leaving the refugee camp to go to settle another country. So,
what does it mean? What is she saying?
It's about love, loss, separation. Aww. And she's a very famous Vietnamese singer in the wartime. And I remember when I was in Vietnam still, before I escaped, and my sister boyfriend escaped by boat, and my sister cried every time she heard this song. And I said, what a sook.
That's what I said. That's terrible.
Yes, but no, it's just to say, oh, it's a beautiful song, but why you had to cry every time? But when I was actually a refugee, and this song is the song they play when someone leaving the refugee camp to go to another country, and they may be the friend that you form during the time you're in the refugee camp, and you know that you may never see them again ever. So it's really haunting, really sad, and I think every Vietnamese refugee in the refugee camp will know this song, and will still move by it. And when I heard it, I couldn't stop crying. When I was in the refugee camp at that time, say, ah, now I know why my sister crying.
Now I understand.
Yes. So when I got homesick now, from time to time, I put that song on.
Oh. Yeah. Can you tell us how you came to be a refugee? What led up to you wanting to leave Vietnam?
At that time, 26 years ago, the old saying, they said, if the electricity pole could walk, it would walk out of Vietnam.
Wow.
So it's just a situation.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, there was no freedom of speech, no freedom of creativity, no nothing.
Depression.
So yeah, so I just had to decide to move on, to have a freedom and to have the future.
And you'd already studied art?
Yes.
At the University of Saigon?
Yes, at that time.
And so you reached the end of your degree?
Yes.
And did you just sort of think, you know, what am I going to do?
Basically, at that time, the government still control very closely. Even some now, actually. if you want your artwork hung at the exhibition, you have to paint what that a certain topic that the government allow you to paint, the pride of the country, and
everything every artist.
About, yes,
every artist.
Every artist.
How boring
so
is that?
So basically, it's very political, very propaganda, and you can't do anything else out of that. And you can't even do abstract work because they don't understand this. They were afraid of you send a message through your artwork. So the only artwork, the style that they let you do is the realistic style that they got it from Russia. So that's it. No artwork, no nothing. Because really, I think they scared of artists sending a message through their work. And they don't understand it.
And then can you tell us a bit about how you got on that boat? You got on the boat at Saigon.
Yes, and travel along the river down to Cần Thơ, that is down south.
Like near where the river, is it
river,
the Mekong?
Where the river,
the Mekong river?
Delta, the region.
Yeah, where it meets the ocean.
Meet the ocean, and it just out and then got into the big boat and escaped. So I spent exactly 1 week, 7 days, seven nights on the sea.
Now, you told me when you were going down the Mekong for 2 days, you had to stay very, very quiet. Lots of you in the hold of the boat that ordinarily was taking stuff to market at Saigon and then was meant to return to an empty boat.
Yes, because the boat came from Cần Thơ, and they went to, they cruised along the river to Saigon market. So they sell the goods, and on the way back, it's basically it's an empty boat. So therefore, they let about 10 people hiding underneath of the boat. So when they had to stop on the way from Saigon to Cần Thơ, they had to stop somewhere in the villages, somewhere in the country town, to chat with people. That's their routine, and they can't change their routine.
Or they look suspicious.
Yes, that's right. So when the boat just stay still there for them to chat with their friends or whatever, we had to stay absolutely still on the boat because any movement, the boat will shake. And the people will see someone on that boat. That give them the suspicions and they check. So it's absolutely still until they start moving. And along the countryside, by all means, there's no one around. We can move around a little bit and that sort of thing. But when they stay still, we had to stay still too.
Were you scared?
Very scared.
Must be terrifying.
Yes.
I mean, to have to have that feeling of, you know, will I get caught? Will I not get caught?
Mm.
It's when you start, how to say, they organize. Right from the market. The market time is very busy, of course. The boat there. So, like, two people walking slowly follow. There's one person to guide two people onto the boat from a different timing. So, you only know they introduce us to that person. You have to follow that one in the distance. So, they got into the boat and we follow them. And we got on the boat silently. And then another 10-15 minutes, another one come in. And another 10-15 minutes, another one got on board. And when we have about 10 or 12, and that's it. And then until they finish the market time, they sold all of their goods and that sort of thing. And then they got on board and they sell all the way back to Cần Thơ. So that last time we already hidden under the boat.
And at that time, what were the consequences of being caught doing that?
Obviously, you get to jail. And at that time, I mean, communism, there's corruption everywhere, everywhere. So basically, if you get caught, you pay the money straight away. Then you get out. But if you don't have the money to pay them straight away, they start putting your name down on the list. In the system, that means later on you had to pay much more to get out, or they put you into the political categories, like try to change the government, do wrong thing, try to fight the government, and that sort of thing. And then it would be much harder. You may be jailed, and so this is much more complicated to get out.
Wow.
So it's better to have the money to pay straight away when you get caught and you are within a few hours or a day or two.
So you made it to where the Mekong meets the ocean and then you jumped on the bigger boat.
Yes.
7 days, seven nights at sea into Malaysia.
Yes, we landed somewhere in Malaysia and they isolated us straight away because it's not a refugee camp and they don't want us to wander around. So they totally isolated us. And then they contacted the UN and the UN organized the bus to come and pick us up and take us to the refugee camp.
Well, here we are on Lefty Finkos talking escaping from Vietnam with Quay Wing, the artist who's been in Australia now since 1987 but has had quite a journey along the way to get here. You're with Lefty Pinkos. I'm Kath. I'm with Lauren. Brian's sick. Hello, Brian. Big kisses to you at home and all the rest. We're in here at Beautiful Joy for the next half hour. It's just fabulous. Stay with us.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
No, you haven't actually accidentally turned on Classic FM. This is Joy.
Joy.
You're with Lefty Finkos. But we're playing the favourite music of our special guest this week, Quay Wing, who joins us in the studio. Now, you've told us some of the other tracks, the story behind them. What's the story behind that one?
Oh, that is one of my mum favorite track, but in Vietnamese. There's a famous Vietnamese singer sing that one in Vietnamese. So every time I think of my mum, I listen to that track, but I collect every different version of that song from any language, from any singer, because I know that is my mum's favorite track.
And so what are the words saying?
Oh, just, you know, that song is Serenade, I think.
Oh,
yes. And,
yeah.
Yes. Sorry. So it's just a beautiful song. Aww. And, yes, it is just, I get homesick often. And,
yeah, I bet.
Particularly, I'm very close to my mom. Mm. So if I think of my mom, I put that one on.
Now, Quay, one of the other things that you've spoken about in your public life is the difficulty of being gay in Vietnam. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, when I was young, I acted a little bit effeminate, like girly, basically. And at that time, I think I was about 10, 11 or something.
Yep.
And children around my age, my friends and neighbors start picking on me and laugh at me and call me bede, that means poof, basically.
Really?
And I hate to be picked on, so I kind of like pretend myself and change myself, like act straight, that is what you call it.
Yep.
And since then, it's less and less. And then grown up and just go ballroom dancing, have girlfriends and everything, so people forgot about it. Until I came to Australia, and then I found about my true self, and then I know who I am and what my preference is.
Really?
Yeah.
So I guess then leaving Vietnam, being a refugee, was also an opening, not just to a new world, you know, professionally and, you know, with lifestyle, but also sexually, intimately.
Definitely. I don't think I would be openly gay or turn gay. I almost married, actually.
In Vietnam?
Yes.
Are you glad you didn't?
True, very true. Because I know there's a lot of closeted gay people in Vietnam, and they married, they had children and everything. And guess what? Two of my best friends from high school, they both gay. And we never talked about it ever before I left Vietnam, ever. So three of us, like, always together, like visiting each other houses and everything, always together. And I left Vietnam, and when I got back, and one of my friend worked as a chef at the New World Hotel in Ho Chi Minh City, and his parents said, oh, you can find him in this apartment next to his work. So I got there. He has a boyfriend at that time, and then I asked, how about the other? And he said, oh yeah, he's gay too.
Wow.
So how about that? So basically, we are who we are.
Each other.
I just had to hide myself because I didn't want to be picked on. Mm. I didn't want to be laughed at. Mm. So until I came to Australia, and then I actually, I'm glad I did. Yeah.
Yeah, no, sounds like it was more of a, not just escaping the confines of Vietnam, but also discovering yourself and discovering who you were.
And definitely, because it, I grew up from the family, my father was very strict. I have literally, I didn't even try to express myself because my father is so strict and so dogmatic. A lot of time when we were young, we planned to do something, and he said, no, you're not allowed to do this. You do this, 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 this. And that's it. So basically, I turn into the habit of not making decision on anything. I'm waiting for my father the decision.
How awful.
Because I know that if I make something, I plan something, he would say no. Because, of course, parents always the best for you. So they always give you the best option. So basically, your option is not the best. And you have to follow exactly the father option. So because I came to Australia, it gave me the chance to plan everything for myself, be independent, do everything for myself, and know my true self. And it took me a long time to come out through that Archibald piece. And like a few years, basically, I came out because I get together with my partner now, Jonathan, and we bought the house together, and I have to come out. Basically, I talked to my boss. I say, we bought the house. I needed a few days off to do paperwork and such show. But literally, not coming out to the world, just my boss.
Mm.
And then I still very feel uncomfortable to come out, basically. And particular Vietnamese community. And the Archibald is the first public artwork that I come out.
Wow, in 2010.
Yeah, it's a self-portrait. They call Unleash, so you can imagine.
It's a very gorgeous piece. Okay. You arrived in Australia with nothing.
Yes.
Spent 2 years studying English and trying to get your sort of tertiary education, you know, equivalency or whatever, together. Yeah. And then you studied and became a graphic artist for 15 years, was it?
Yes. I came to Australia and my English wasn't good enough at all.
Mm.
Nothing, basically nothing. So, and I knew need money to go back to school to study because I didn't want to waste my skill. So I worked in the factory to make the headlamp for cars, the company called Hella Manufactory. And I worked 2 years from 10 to 14 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
And then studied English in the evening for 2 years. And then I went back to the tertiary orientation program to build a portfolio. And then 3 years in university to study graphic design. And then finished uni. I got a job straight away. And I worked as a graphic designer for 15 years until I returned to fine art from beginning of 2009.
Wow. And what was it like to go back to art?
It's amazing. And
really?
Lucky that, unlucky, but lucky, because 2008, the end of 2008, the economy crashed and my company's gone.
Oh, so you lost your job.
Yeah, I lost my job. And Jonathan, my partner, said, this is the time for you to follow your dream because we literally pay off the mortgage. So he said, if you want,
you can do it now.
Do it now. If not,
it's
never.
Not going to happen.
So he supported me all the way. And
oh, what a sweetheart.
He's really, really good. And he's the most understanding man. Because, you know, there's a lot of cross-culture. People married a different cultural background. And sometimes there's a lot of conflict about money. For example, a lot of Vietnamese still sending money back to help their family in Vietnam and things. And a lot of people who married, even Vietnamese to Vietnamese, and say, why you send back money to your mom or your parents? So you're not allowed to. Or that sort of thing. A lot of, when it comes to money, there's a lot of situation like that. And when you married another people from another culture, sometimes they don't understand why you have to send back the money every year.
Hmm.
But with Jonathan, he had to remind me, have you sent back the money to your nephew? Because my brother, he's quite poor, and he can't afford to send his children to school. My mom had to help him, and we live in Australia, so we help older the nephew and nieces' education, because we can't stand to see that the next generation has no education. So Jonathan had to remind me, said, did you remember to send the money to your mom to give it to your nephew and nieces?
Oh.
So he's
onto it.
Yes, he's really onto it.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy. It's myself, Kath, and Lauren in the studio with Quay Wing. We're talking art. We're talking running away from everything you've ever known. Stay with us on Joy.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh, what a fabulous piece of music, Quay. Can you tell us a bit about this piece?
Oh, this one, I just love the track. There's no particular deep, meaningful at all. I just love the track, and it really, when I do a lot of background work, with a lot of movement and emotions and light and shade and that sort of thing, I normally put classical or opera on because the sound suit my mood, suit my work.
Wow.
I don't understand anything about it at all, but it emotionally and mood-wise, suit my work.
Now, can you tell us a bit about your work? Because we've all seen, well, you know, me and Lauren, I guess that's all of us, we've seen Unleashed, which was your Archibald Prize nominee painting.
Yes.
Very, very fine, delicate work, and very autobiographical, which I understand isn't always what you do.
No, actually, most of my work are figurative work. It's about bodies and things. But normally, my work is, I want the people look beyond the beautiful body and look at their emotion, what they try to tell through their body language. So that is my work normally. But with that Archibald piece, it's a self-portrait, as you can see. It's very symbolic. Everything in that painting has a meaning. For example, you find it up to the top part of the brain, there's the lips being stitched together.
Yes, yes.
And that is what do you call it?
A
metaphor for freedom of speech. Basically, there's no freedom of speech in Vietnam.
Mm.
And there's a lot of genital bit and pieces in there.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought they were
male and female and things, because I experienced both with female partner and male partners and everything, so it's part of my life.
Huh.
So it will be in there. And the octopus is, for me, it represents the Vietnamese culture. Like the octopus is the one of the strongest creature in the ocean. When they grab hold of you, basically, that's it. Basically, so what I mean is, in my opinion, every culture has some good bit and bad bit.
Hmm.
Some I want to keep, some I don't want to keep. I want to change it, but I can't change from it because it's just too strong. It holds me back. It's just like the arms or the legs of
tentacles,
the octopus,
yeah.
And grab me and hold me. One level is it's grounded me as who I am, is with my cultural background, but at the same time I can't escape from it. Yeah, so that's the idea of that octopus, and of course the bird. And if you look on the top head of my head, the head is one animal, the body become one another animals, and the tail becomes something else, and the feet some different animals. Because I do a lot of meditation, and when I do meditation, I see things, I see colors, and things constantly changing, color changing, shape changing, images changing. So I just want, there's nothing stay still. My thought is constantly, maybe because I don't practice often enough, so I can't get to the state that a pure blank mind yet. So my mind jump all over the place, and it moving from one image to the next one. So that is the representing, like my thought always fighting and moving.
us about the work you're doing at the moment, where you've been back to Vietnam to interview people about human rights, but it's called Vietnam Australia, or maybe it's Australia Vietnam Voicing the Unspoken. Tell us about this.
I get approached by Multicultural Arts Victoria and the Human Rights Arts and Film Festival.
Yep.
And I come up with a very, very good concept. My installation piece is research-based. I want to go to Vietnam to interview people with one simple question. What is the human right? What do they think about human rights in Vietnam right now? I intended to interview 500 people, but when I got into 200, when I started getting to the group of people who normally give the demonstration to fight with the government, to fight to get their land back and their houses back and everything, because basically the government or the corrupted official, they stole their land, they stole their houses and things. So they've been demonstrated for the last 30 years or so trying to get the land and the house back, but still to go nowhere. And I met a lot of people who get beaten, the plainclothes police literally beaten them at the demonstration, kicked them into the private part, bleeding, fractured their skull, the whole body, bruised, bleed, everything. You Google their name. I met some of the ladies and I Google their name in YouTube. You see the images. It's just heartbreaking.
Mm.
So when I got into interview those people, and that lady even said, like, how many hundred or thousand do you want to interview? I can give you the list. Like one of the tiny little town in the Mekong Delta region, tiny little town, over 200 people on the list that I can interview. She said, she can let me, if I have time, she can let me over 100, 200,000 people to interview easily.
And when do we expect to see the work that's come from this?
That is already passed. It's a part of the human rights.
That was
and
just recently.
Yes, it's about 3 weeks ago.
And what was the response from people when they saw it?
It went very, very well, because part of the statement, what I did was I put every single one statement inside of one head, the Vietnamese conical head.
Wow.
So my installation piece is 500 conical heads in the space. And in each of them has one statement for one voice from one person.
Wow.
And I invite people who go to the exhibition, if they experience anything about that, they can raise their voice. They take the pen, they write inside the head and add into the pie of the installation. So there's a blank head that the unspoken voice, and the whole big pie of heads already been written with their voice. So you can add in, the viewer can come in, want to say something, they can say and contribute into the exhibition and make the installation bigger and bigger.
That just sounds fantastic.
It's a very good response. And as I said, it's a research base. It's not my voice. It's the voice of the people. And to be able to get their statement, to start with, when I approach people in Vietnam, I photocopy my passport, show them my photocopy of my passport, and say, here I am. I'm living in Australia. I'm working as an artist. So they know that I'm not the undercover police.
Like a spy or whatever, yeah.
Yes, I'm not an undercover police. And I don't need your name. I don't want you to be in trouble with the government. Mm. I just need your voice. Mm. Even so, some people refuse to give a comment. They said, too sensitive. Sorry, we can't answer.
Mm.
You can see the level of fear is still there.
Quay. You've been a fantastic guest.
Thank you.
That's it for Lefty Pinkos for this week. All the best with your art.
Thank you.
It just sounds like you're totally on a roll. Lauren?
Yes.
Do you want to add something?
No, I just think what an incredible journey, and you know, to have someone like Quay to get the voices heard and to bring it to our attention that, you know, we live in such an amazing country, and that there are countries in the world that don't have what we have, and don't have freedom of speech, and don't have the what we would call luxuries. I think that's fantastic.
And actually, a lot of people come and said, particularly Australian, they said, really, it is actually still happen now in Vietnam.
We're not as educated as we used to be.
That is exactly what happened now, as you can see. My piece is about research. It's not what I think. Or
it's the voice of people.
Their
and
voice.
Right now.
And what they actually been kicked or bitten or something. Still. So
amazing.
Anyway.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Kath, and thank you very much, Lauren.
No worries.
And onwards into the evening. Stay with Joy for a great evening ahead. And we'll see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.